Welcome back to the Tradar, a Traitor's podcast. I'm Matthew. I'm a writer who has spent the past few years working in TV development and podcast production. And this podcast is dedicated to the worldwide TV phenomenon, the Traitors. For this season, we have been back in New Zealand for season three, metaphorically, not literally. We've been recapping every episode, analysing all of the strategy, the tactics, the gameplay, the missteps, and the mistakes. And joining me for every episode has been a different co-host. Joining me today to discuss episode seven is actually a returning co-host who is a favourite of the pod. Back to break down the latest episode. Let's find out who it might be. Welcome back to the podcast, Magicker. How are you doing today?
I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's warm where we are right now, but not so warm that I'm shiny and red as I maybe in the next episode that I may or may have not recorded already before this one. I'm not saying that's happened, but I'm less burning hot and dying at this moment in time.
Which I do have memories, happy memories of recording Traitors India last summer, where I decided I needed to wear some Indian-inspired clothing because it's my dad was born in India. I wanted to honor the theme, and it was so hot I was dying. But we've got to suffer for fashion, haven't we? That's how it
And
goes.
art, and art, to the sake of the podcast. Welcome back. You have joined me already on this season. You're back for more. Today we are going to be talking about episode seven. I think was maybe episode three or four you joined me for last time. Three, I think. You were enjoying the season last time. Is it still living up to that? Are you enjoying this season of the show?
I am, yes. I mean, having watched so many seasons, must be up above 40 now. I am always looking for something a little bit different. I'll be honest that I'm not saying it's fatigue, but you want something a bit different. And in the end, it's just people, isn't it? It just comes down to the people. It's a great cast. And actually, we'll get to it. But what happened at the roundtable today with a traitor really going off piste, not even in terms of revealing themselves to be a traitor, but just being a bit weird and a bit spiteful, that's new. I can't think of that anywhere else where, oh, you've just been a bit mean. And what does that mean for the game? That was really interesting. So there's always something new to discover. But yeah, really great cast, some really charismatic people. Very smart, very touching stories about their personal lives. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it.
We had a bit of a traitor meltdown this episode, and I totally agree. I feel like I say this every season that I say, oh, great cast, love the cast. I really mean it. I've got such a soft spot for Traitors New Zealand and Australia. I know they're two separate countries. I'm not conflating them. They're just in the same part of the world. And this time it will be the same production company working on both and the same set. But I watched this episode and yeah, I really genuinely am enjoying it and think it is a great cast. And speaking of the cast, might have a little bit of news later on the podcast to discuss. Like I said, we are going to talk about episode seven today, Magicka. Before we dive right in, got a couple of very important things to talk about, some traitors updates. First of all, now this is probably kind of only super relevant if you are in the UK, particularly in London, near London, can get to London easily. But even if you're not, I think we'll be interested to know about the traitors' acts of betrayal. So there's going to be a stage show in the West End in London all about the traitors. The traitors is sort of changing. It's migrating from TV to the stage. Traitors' Acts of Betrayal is going to begin next year. Here's a little bit about it. Tickets have just gone on sale, which is why I'm talking about it now. We knew about it for a couple of months, but in the past few days, we've actually got details of what it might look like and how it's going to work. So The Traitors, Act of Betrayal is a new cycle of five plays that does something television cannot. We didn't know that before. It is five separate plays, a different show each night. It takes the show's premise and answers the question, who would have won if different players had been chosen to be the traitors? From Monday to Friday, the story begins identically but ends five different ways. Characters banished or murdered early in one version emerge victorious in another. Each play stands alone as a complete drama, and together they form an unprecedented portrait of who people are under pressure and the way their true colours show in the end. Then on Saturdays, the audience takes control as they decide who will wear the cloak. Their choice determines in real time which version will be played out during that performance. There's a little bit more about the shows on lwtheatres.co.uk. That's where you can buy tickets. It's running from the 11th of May until the 31st of July, 2027. Of course, I have got some tickets already, and Magica, you're going to be joining me in the theatre. Are you looking forward to this one?
I am extremely confused. I have absolutely no idea what we're going to go and witness. But hey, it's got traitors in the title. It's theatre. We both currently live in London. Let's go and see it, check it out.
We must
Oh, I
go.
don't. What I don't know is, are they going to go, oh, welcome to this TV show, The Traitors You Are Now Playing? Like, I mean, are there going to be cameras on stage? Like, it's so weird. But it's meta. Like, it's going to be fascinating. I don't think they would put it on. There's too much at stake. They want it to run and run, obviously. I don't think it would be rubbish, but I'm already so confused. I don't know what we're going to go and see.
Yeah, I can't figure out if it will be presented almost like we're watching a show. So a host will come on and say, "Welcome to the game. Here's our players." Or if we're going to be presented a story as if it really is a murder mystery and some pe like an Agatha Christie, like the mousetrap. Like here's some people. They're going to come to this castle, and they aren't pretending to be contestants on a show. Are they just characters who come to cat like Cluedo and people are genuinely going to be killed off? I don't know, but I'm okay with not knowing. I want a surprise.
Yeah, I just hope people aren't genuinely killed because that will be it's hard. You have to keep replacing the cast. And then maybe some unions might get involved. So it depends how meta
Well,
we want to go with this.
that's why they're doing five different versions because they need as much income as possible. They need return customers. They've got to pay new actors all the time. Like I said, we're gonna go one of the first couple of weeks. I would really like to go and see all five. I know that's a bit of money to shell out, but not too much. You know, there's quite a range of ticket prices. I have to say, they start apparently in some nights there are £15 tickets. There are very reasonable seats for like £25, which in the West End in London is really not bad. They go all the way up to the crazy VIP packages at like £165. Magica, I did not buy those tickets for us. Sorry to disappoint you, but we've got quite reasonable seats there. And it's a theatre that I've been in before. It's the Gillian Lynn Theatre, which I'm really impressed with. It's a beautiful theatre. I've been in there to see My Neighbour Totoro, I think might still be on right now, and War Horse years ago I saw there, Standing at the Sky's Edge. It's a really sort of tall theatre. It's sort of, I don't know the technical term, but it's very curved and there's sort of no bad seat in the house. I thought this play, when I heard about it, or these plays, were going to be in some really small theatre somewhere. Maybe you only get a couple hundred people in at a time, but this is Gillian Lynn Theatre is very impressive. So I predict it's supposed to run for like a month and a bit. So was the Traitors Live experience that just keeps getting extended and extended and extended and is doing incredibly well. I suspect and hope this will go further and do really well and people will keep coming back.
I mean, you know, when you've got a big franchise, and it is unusual for like a kind of reality game to turn into a theatre. I don't know if that's ever happened before, but when a show is big and successful, you've got Stranger Things in the West End, obviously Harry Potter. There are people who just are like, oh, well, I love that thing, so I'll buy some tickets to go and see whatever this is. So I'm not surprised because we just this, you know, at this point, just remind people, The Traitors is an unbelievably big show. That recently someone brought out the list of the most watched shows of the year. It's there's like a gap the size of the Pacific Ocean between The Traitors, as in civilian and celebrity, which is almost certainly going to be again this year, celebrity up there. And I think even if they include Uncloaked, the top four shows are getting so many millions of viewers. Then there's a gulf, and then there's everything else on television. So that's why they're putting it on, and I'm not surprised, and I hope it does really well.
Yeah. And I often say at the start of the podcast, this podcast dedicated to the TV phenomenon. In the UK, it really is a phenomenon on, like you said, in terms of viewing figures and numbers. It's such a pleasant surprise for the TV industry to have something so huge. So I guess, yeah, if it's going to make money, they'll make money whatever way they can. I have some more big news for the podcast specifically. I'm going to save that till the end. I'm going to tease everybody. And one more thing before we jump into episode 7, I've got a little bit of a clarification on something very helpful. On episode 5, we had the button mission. Press the button, push the button. By the way, where is the Sugar Babes cover for the traitors that we need in this moment? Push the button, of course. I was wondering about the teams. I said, oh, it's really weird. We ended up with like an all-women team and then all the guys, and then we had a team with Debbie and Harrison ended up together. What did they? I was like, oh, that's weird. Did they pick that? Aroha from the show sent me a little message to help me out here. Aroha said, we were told to get into teams at breakfast that morning, and essentially one of the teachers stood up and numbered everyone off into groups. Which is, of course, it was the teacher that did this. They couldn't keep it in the edit because it was so lame. Lol. No drama at all. Everyone was just like, okay, miss. So there we go. One of the cast members who's a teacher took charge, numbered everyone. There's your groups. And they went along with it. So that answers my question. Thank you, Aroha. I think we've got a few more things. We've got a couple of voice notes from listeners later on. But for now, I think it's time to go ahead and get into episode 7. Let's remind ourselves at the end of episode 6, Brad's domino effect fell erroneously on Harrison, and after the traitors sent four players to a death match, we were left to find out who would survive between Sam and Dave. So here we begin. Maybe not surprisingly, we go to breakfast. They're gonna keep us holding on for a little bit longer before we find out the outcome. So we're beginning on some nice shots of sunrise and so on. Violet, Debbie, and Chloe come into breakfast first. They're still really gutted about Harrison's departure. Obviously, Debbie is still keeping her secret, which makes me think about something here. This sounds really cruel. Hear me out. I want Debbie to be banished rather than murdered. Because if she's get murdered, and we've seen this in other versions of the show, we don't get the reveal of the secret relationship. Like, none of the other players find out about it. So it feels like, oh, what was the point of that? We didn't get the effect.
They can do. We one time again, no spoilers, but the host comes in and says, "Oh, so and so, so sad, murdered in the night. I guess she'll get to be with her family, like
Yeah.
Bob." It wasn't Bob.
Yeah.
But you know, so it, but it's much less than they're going, oh no, I can't believe it. But that's they're not there to, yeah, to deliver it themselves. I totally agree. And when there were some votes for Debbie, I'm sorry, spoilers in for this episode, but I was like, go on, more. I won't. Although to be honest, I don't know, we'll get there. But Debbie probably just wouldn't have made as dramatic a reveal as possible. She seems like such a sweet person, but I don't know. Yeah,
Yeah.
we'll get to it. The drama. We need a bit more drama. But I mean, she's providing some drama. But again, the my son, but Harrison is, you know, could have been a whole thing, but it's not.
I was thinking about this. I was planning what she might say. She could do a little bit of wordplay, Magicka, and say, before I go, I wanted to tell you he wasn't just Hera's son, he was Dibby's son. There we go.
Yeah.
So just if that doesn't happen in the show, I'll be very upset at that missed opportunity. Hey. Chloe then tells Debbie and Violet about the death match. And it's only here I realized, oh yeah, of course, this all happened after they said goodnight. The other players have no idea about any of this. They were just taken off and given these little letters. They didn't even know something happened in plain sight. They are none the wiser. And Chloe was the first person to survive the death match, so even she doesn't know the outcome. Neither does Hannah. So she's telling Debbie and Violet about this. And there's a little moment of Chloe in confessional, assuming that all four players in the death match must have been faithful. David and I spoke about this on the podcast, and I was trying to pontificate and explain, well, actually, here's why I do think a traitor could be in this game, but I don't know. The New Zealand might have their own rules for how it would have, maybe they wouldn't have let them do that, but I reckon theoretically a traitor could be in the death match. Go back and listen to the last episode to find out why I thought that. And then Violet says the exact opposite in her confessional. She's saying, nah, I think there's a traitor. There must, if this death match happened, there was a traitor in there. So it's convincing her even further that Chloe is a traitor and has engineered this whole thing. And she voted for Chloe last night. Maruya and Keanu are next. Keanu's obviously playing dumb. He's acting like he's got no idea about a death match. Four people were chosen. What? Chloe explains it all again. He does have a moment that I've not quite seen from Keanu, and he's confessional. He shows a bit of self-doubt, or not self-doubt, but he gives the impression this is becoming a struggle. It's we're at episode 7. It's hard. It's obviously hard to keep this up the whole time. Keanu just always seems so confident and quite sassy, and he's having a great time being a traitor. But yeah, there was a little moment of insight into how actually it must be very difficult for him to keep it all up.
Yeah, I'm thinking of other traitors who have been quite cocky and charismatic and over the top kind of at the start. I mean, in confessional, just to be clear, like playing a really good traitor's game, but when they're sat in that armchair being like, yeah, I'm going to take him out, all of that. And a lot of them end up softening. I think it's two things. I think it's the editors choosing to show more doubt as it comes in. Because it really felt like a different Keanu this episode, but I think it's also just they're tired. Like it must be exhausting. And I think the whole bravado, you've prepared your lines, I'm going to be the greatest trader of them all, whatever it is. You've prepared that and you've got your swag on. And then as it goes on, you're like, oh, okay, another day of doing this.
Yeah, definitely. We often see traitors reach the end or near the end, get to the final, and when they finally reveal the truth, they just start crying. They get so emotional. I can think of a player last season in New Zealand, and I always think of way back to UK first series, Wolf, that it weighed so heavily on him. He really had like an emotional breakdown when he was finally able to tell people the truth. It really affected him. So yeah, Keanu probably feeling a little bit of that now. There's further conversation about whether traitors could have been in this death match. Of course, Keanu is using this chance to be like, yeah, I think there would have been a traitor in there. He's going to throw sus on other people. More players arrive at breakfast. We've got James, Maria, Aaron. James, of course, he's a traitor. He's talking in confessional about how he feels he's connected even more with Keanu now because they had their little emotional moment together last night. James was really supportive of Keanu after that Harrison banishment. Keanu was so upset. Maria speaks in confessional and or Miv, whatever we want to call it, and reminds us that, well, she didn't really suspect Harrison of being a traitor, even though she voted for him. We know she does have eyes on Keanu. She's really got this correct suspicion of him. And Violet reminds them all that she didn't vote for Harrison, and she just tells them straight up she's sure that either Chloe or Aroha are traitors. Very, very confident. Very, very wrong, but very, very confident about that.
Yes. And again, I don't want to jump to the end of the episode just yet, but can we just put a pin in that? Violette being extremely 100% confident. She just is. She just is. I know it. I know it. Let's put a pin in that and come back to that after the round table.
Yes, I've got a few notes on that later too. Aroha arrives with Hannah. So we know that Hannah survived. Well, we knew that Hannah survived. The players know that Hannah survived. And so everybody realizes, okay, it's Dave or Sam. One of them has been murdered. Chloe lets Hannah tell the story of the death match. Probably quite wise to do that. Have someone else say it so that, you prove, well, we're both telling you the exact same story. I'm not telling Hannah what to say right now. So Hannah does. And while she's telling the story, I mean, unless they're both traitors and they've planned this whole thing, while Hannah's telling the story, Aaron is a bit suspicious of Aroha and her reactions because she's asking for lots of clarifications. So he wrongly reads too much into it. He thinks that Aroha is putting on a bit of an act here. Knock, knock, knock. The survivor will be entering again. I've said this a couple of times now. I really realize, wow, the numbers are small. Like already it's the final person coming in. So they just dwindle away. And just suddenly you're aware of how few people there are compared to the beginning. We see all the shocked reactions, and then we get our flashback to the death match. We remember that Dave told Sam to go first. He said, ladies first. She immediately picks up the life card straight away. That's it done. A 1 in 8 chance she survived.
Fake
She's crying.
TV fakery. Don't believe it for a second. It's fake.
Rigged.
All these shows are so, it's just rigged. All these shows are so fake because it's so unlikely that she picked that card that obviously it must be faked. Is the logic of an idiot on the internet, which maybe I am one, but I don't actually believe that. I believe that 1 in 8 chance means that there's still a chance, and that was the chance. That's how probability works. Anyway.
And if it was going to be rigged, they would have built up the tension so much more than this. They would have made them go right down to like the last two cards or something. So yeah, Dave can't believe it. They hug. He's telling her, having an amazing game. And he says, tell them I was a faithful. Which is sweet, but I thought, well, yep, if you've been murdered, you don't need to say that. Like, they'll know it's okay. But yeah, he's sort of very proud of his faithful identity and he's glad to be vindicated, even if he is murdered. Although, I take it back, hold on a minute. If you're in Canada, semi-spoilers, you could be murdered in a mission if you are a traitor. Okay, but we're not in Canada. Dave sits down and echoes my words from last time. He says, ladies first sucks. Yes, Dave, shouldn't have said ladies first. It's come back to bite you. Now, David Bloomberg, our co-host, did predict this last time. He thought that Dave would be the one to go purely based on the edit. He felt there were some clues that Dave was.
Are you sure it was the edit? Are you sure it wasn't that David Bloomberg is a psychic?
It could be that David Bloomberg is a psychic. He is well known for being a part of that world,
Yeah.
so
I see you,
maybe.
David. I see what you're doing, working on your psychic powers.
I did spot a crystal ball behind David while we were recording, so okay, it's all becoming clear. There we go. There is a sort of really creepy moment. Dave is at the table alone. He just sits back down, and he sees the two traitors lurking in the trees before they vanish into the night. I'm pretty sure that wasn't the actual traitors, and it was just two people on the team with some cloaks on, but then it made me think, oh, wouldn't it have been good if they had come and revealed themselves? There's no like
Yeah.
jeopardy to that now. Like it just might have been a nice TV moment to see Dave find out the truth.
There must have been a reason for that, because in other versions, sometimes when you have these kind of games, it leads to a murder in plain sight. When we've been in Spooky Destination, often that is the traitors then uncloaking themselves. No, I don't know who was playing those traitors, but I think I did. If you listen very carefully, you can hear one of them say, "Get over it." I think you can just about make that out, one of them. So she
Oh,
was on
that's what that noise
holidays.
was.
Yeah.
Okay, right. I wonder if it was, a couple of hours later they were filming this and someone just thought to say, we can't keep James and Keanu up even later than they already do just to have like one moment. It's not worth it. Let them go to bed. I don't know.
Could it have been that in that episode, the whole thing of them being caught was the, I can say murder in plain sight, the listing, the death match listing in plain sight. That's a catchy term. And so they were like, okay, well, they've done their kind of, revealing twist and all of that. And then if they were to do it again, it's true that that was quite a lot for one episode. But I was surprised. It was a bit odd. I liked it. I liked the fact that, oh, the spook. I think they could do more of that, actually. Oh, no, the traitors are right outside my window. That could be
Yeah.
super creepy.
Yeah. I wondered what I also realized at this point was, oh, we don't, there's no like after show, as far as I know. If there is, it's passed me by for like seven episodes. There's no uncloaked. They're not even doing on social media, on there is a Traitors New Zealand official Instagram page and all that, but they're not doing a little moment where the eliminated players find out the truth. So it's such a shame. It's such a missed opportunity. So I'm sad. I like to see them find out. I like to see the reactions. It's good fun. Maybe I could ask some of them about this and when they find out. We'll see. So back at breakfast, Sam enters. Everyone is totally shocked because they know what's happened now, including Aroha. This totally throws her and Maruya. They were sure that there was that Dave was a traitor after the whole barn mission, and he found the stamp and he was asking questions about it. So they're like, "Oh man, oh, he was a faithful. This is now we don't know what to think." And Keanu also reminds us that the traitor's only, even for him, it's still kind of a surprise. For once, he doesn't have to act. They made the shortlist, but they didn't actually pick the final murder victim. So, and he tells us he actually wished it had been Hannah because she's really clever. She's playing the game well. So, a rare opportunity where the traitors don't have to pretend at breakfast for once. Makes
Yes,
it
but
slightly
even
easier.
then they have to be careful because you don't want to be suddenly change your whole reaction to everything. Like,
Yes.
oh, in the end, it was Dave that went, oop, I mean, oh, Dave
Yeah.
went.
Oh my God, this is what it feels like. Yes. Be careful. Sam is still very emotional, and she's sort of really getting very upset and saying, "Oh, she's so mad at the traitor, she's gonna get her revenge." So I think she maybe needs to be careful that her emotions are not completely overtaking her. And there's a shot of Aroha reacting to that. It's a really split second. I just got the impression Aroha was like not buying it or something, or thought it was a bit over the top. I don't know.
This I just wanted to say as well, because this is where the whole episode is going. Those reactions at breakfast of Aruha, that was her undoing, I think. I mean, there was already a lot of sus on her, but this, the whole thing, like she seems like such an interesting, funny person, but also that whole thing of, oh, can you clarify? Oh, I don't get it, which I think was absolutely genuine. I mean, we know that she obviously is a faithful. She didn't get it, so she was asking for clarification, but she's got a very direct way of speaking, and it looks, I understand why to the players it looked like she was a traitor who was overdoing it a little bit. And that's been a theme for a couple of episodes. It reached a peak here. Let's see how that plays out at the round table.
Yeah. Just one final thing here is that it's a really funny, silly moment that Sam's having this emotional meltdown, and like the next seat along or two seats along, Hannah's just casually eating a pastry. Like Sam's like, "Ah, I'm gonna get vengeance," and Hannah's just, I think she says, "I love a main labourer." I really like Hannah. This made me laugh so much. She's unbothered. Madeline arrives, laments the loss of Dave, and now reveals that the traitors set up this death match in plain sight. And I thought that was important actually to tell them that, because of course, as we always talk about, the faithful have so little actual concrete evidence to ever go on. It's all just complete guesswork. I think sometimes they do need little bits of help. So this is kind of a help. At least they can start to think, right, we know they were chosen in some specific way in front of everybody. What did we notice? Can we triangulate? Can we put things together? Did we know? Now they don't, and they actually don't figure it out, but
I was wondering here if there could actually be, again, if in future seasons, when there's a murder in plain sight, that they could just, it could be a special privilege that you win, that you earn in a mission, that one person, very much like Million Dollar Secret, gets to go in a secret room and get a little bit more information. Because you could simply say, I'm trying to get it right because it's a new there, the traitors shortlisted their people with their words. And again, they're never going to get it. But then, how interesting to say, who said what? You said that. Oh, you said parakeet. Oh, you said bagel. Like, and suddenly it becomes a whole thing. That's the thing I've always liked. That's the thing that Million Dollar Secret has, I would say, over the traitors. Let's be clear. We're not going to totally pivot and only cover Million Dollar Secret, although we do cover it. But I love the clue, the little missions they have, the little, what agendas, isn't it, that they have to do. They're just fun. You've got to do a weird thing. You've got, bump someone on the head with a beach ball. Like, it's just fun. I think it's really fun, and I think we should do more of it in the Traitors.
Yeah, I agree. I like that idea. I think that would help. Madeline gives them their clue for the mission and says, "You, my brave faithful, must stay one step ahead if you wish to survive. You've been dodging their shots so far, but for today's mission, you will take aim at each other. It's going to be a smashing good time. I'll be waiting in my dungeon." Off she goes. We have some reality time around the castle. The castle, the manor, the castle. It's called Claremont Castle. But the players call it a manor. I'll call it whatever I want. The house. And
It's definitely
Aroha.
not a castle. I'm sorry. I'm right in front of it right now. I've
It's a
seen.
modest castle. It's
Look, I'm not shaming other countries that don't have quite as much, millennia of history, of this kind of architectural history, but that is not a castle.
harsh words from Magicka. Wow.
Sorry.
Okay. Have to rename it. Claremont House. Not Castle.
Looks like a B&B to me. Let's call it B&B.
Claremont B&B. Get back to the B&B and you're gonna banish your first traitor. So there's a little bit of time in the kitchen. We've got Aroha and Maruya, and they do this hilarious search because they know there's been a death match shortlist in plain sight. They're like, what? There must be clues. Maybe there's something here. They're opening books. They're looking at ornaments. They're looking at the snooker score, like the board up on the wall to see if anyone's written anything. It's not any help. And they are also totally thrown by, I get, by Dave's murder. They can't understand. Well, first of all, they thought Dave was a traitor, and now they can't understand why the traitors killed off someone who could have been seen as a traitor. They can't quite figure out the logic behind this.
Can I just say,
I'm
this is always a thing, and every time I'm screaming at the screen when they go, "How did they do it? Why did they choose them?" I'm always like, "It was in plain sight. They were almost certainly just going for the least, the ones that they could do to complete their mission without getting caught." And that people probably are saying that, but the editors are not showing us. But every time I'm like, "It isn't a master plan, when it's in plain sight, you've just got to get it done."
Yeah, you just have to take whatever opportunity you can, absolutely. We see Debbie talking to Keanu, and she's a bit suspicious of Hannah. She recalls something that happened in the car several days ago, actually. It's funny that it's only coming up now in the, well, I suppose it's maybe the first time that Debbie's mentioned it, so they couldn't have really put it in an earlier episode. But we get a little flashback. This ends up being very important. She remembers that several days ago, before they had banished any traitors, she was in a car coming back from one of the missions or going to a mission with Hannah, Maria, and James. And she's, Debbie was theorizing about the traitors and how they hadn't caught any of them yet, and therefore the traitors were probably quite relaxed, sitting back, realizing that their game is going very well. And I don't really know what Debbie's point is, other than to say, that's going to make it even more difficult to find them because they're not doing anything particularly conspicuous. I think that's what she's saying. They're probably just blending in, not doing anything outrageous and very obvious. I think that's what she's saying. And the car just goes silent. Like nobody responds to it. Nobody's like, oh yeah, I never thought of that. Or, oh, well, who does that point to? They just say nothing and it's a bit awkward. So Debbie is telling Keanu about this. And Keanu is probably thinking, I don't really know what to say to that. But of course he takes the opportunity. So we just see Keanu going, that is suspicious. And Debbie also, Debbie, I mean, there were three people in the car, but Hannah's the one that she's focusing on because it ties up with another theory that she had. Hannah was really close with Jill. Jill came up with that Harrison as the puppet master theory. So Debbie wonders if it was Hannah who gave Jill that idea. She's trying to sort of tie all these different things together. And she's wrong, but she's trying. She's trying to figure things out. She's trying to piece it all together. We then see Sam confiding in Hannah and Chloe that she still suspects Aroha. And she thinks that Aroha put Hannah in that death match as a bit of a bluff because they're friends. Hannah's like, I'm not, she's not into this. She's not buying it. She gets on really well with Aroha. She just can't see it as a traitor. And then the conversation comes around to James as a suspect for one of the first times we've heard. Chloe, again, it is trying to solve the murder death match shortlist in plain sight thing wrongly. And she says, well, James, he hugged me last night. It was the only person that hugged me after the mission. I wonder if was it that? Was it something to do with the hug? And she noticed this weird comment he made at the round table when Harrison was about to be banished, when James said to him, oh, if anyone was capable of doing this, it'd be you. You'd be the most amazing traitor ever. And so Chloe's sort of, or Hannah is like, oh, why would he have said that to Harrison? Just seems like a weird comment. So they're onto something. She is noticing something strange in what James was saying there. Very observant. And shortly after this, it's time for the mission. We suddenly arrive. We don't get any time in the cars or anything. We're back at a warehouse, or what looks like a derelict warehouse. This is like the third mission where they've just gone to this abandoned building. Did they? It's giving budget. It's giving budget constraints. It's giving, we just found this warehouse and maybe we didn't even ask permission. I'm sure they did. I'm kidding. But saves a bit of time and money if they can just do some indoor things. So here we are.
Do you think maybe a security guard turned up and they were like, okay, we acknowledge we haven't got the rights to use this, but if you could just please put on this gold mask and this cloak and allow me to call you a ghoul, we'll be out of here in a couple of hours.
And they were like, all right, yeah, sounds like fun. There are lots of urns on shelves. And immediately I thought, oh, this is kind of a mission we've seen before. It's going to be riddles and pick the words. It's not that, though. It's actually a bit simpler than that. It's a stone throwing challenge. Each player is going to get 5 stones, throw them, try and smash a jar. Each jar is labeled a little differently. If they hit a plus sign, they'll add $500 to the pot. If they hit an eliminated player's name, they'll lose $500. Some of them are blank, has no effect, and some of them have a shield on them. If you hit that, who knew it? You'd win a shield. What a surprise. So once the rules were explained, I thought, oh, okay, this is kind of dull. Like, this is not that exciting a mission. But then I realised, well, they've added a little bit. They do it on their own. They're not all watching each other, so that gives you the chance to lie about what you've hit, so they won't know who hit what. So well, there's a little element there. Not too much to talk about in this one, Magicka, I don't think, unless we really want to analyse every single throw and
Yeah,
technique.
I mean, I've taken notes on each individual f throw, but are you saying that that's not? Shall I just like forget my notes and I just tear up my piece of paper? It's fine. No, it's fine. It's fine.
No, look,
I
if
just
you want.
love the mission. I love watching loads of people not hit some urns and then hit the urns, and Madeline saying, "No, you didn't hit it enough." And it was like, "Oh, okay."
You can't just chip it, you gotta smash it. We could, I mean, Chloe went for some underarm activity. Interesting. Most people were overarm. Violette is a javelin thrower, we now know, so she was pretty good. Maruya, Sam, very good at this too. Sam gets one first time. Other than that, most of them are a bit rubbish, and there's not much exciting to say, I don't think.
I think it, on a serious point, okay, budget is budget, and I think they've done quite well on a budget, you know. And look, if the choice is between having the show back on a budget or not having it back, then they're doing everything right because it's back and we love it. However, I do think they've not taken the memo that the missions in some way should feed into the game. This was just throwing stuff for like, oh, now you've got money, now you lost money, now you've got a shield. Okay, the only bit of interest there was the shield, who got a shield, but that's season one. Who got the shield? You know, we need a little bit more texture. So this was a bit of a missed opportunity because it was boring. Let's just be clear. Like it was a boring mission for
How
us to watch. I am
dare you?
so sorry. However, look, I'm only giving love to this New Zealand cast. Madeline was doing her absolute best. She was like, this party sucks. So she was just standing there going, giving a little bit of, banter, all of that. So she was doing her absolute best. I think they probably saw the mission and were like, Madeline, can you just spice this up a little bit? Because this is boring AF.
Yeah, Madeline, you've got a lot of heavy lifting to do here. And she did. Yeah,
She did.
maybe they could have different like bonuses on the some of the there's an urn that I don't know, like cancels a murder tonight, or you get a double vote if you hit this one, like some extra things that we've never seen.
Well, yeah, and I mean, again, just they could have just been a little bit more creative. Maybe they're going, because I've always said this, because, you know, the show was off for a little bit, then it's back with a very new production, new host. So maybe they are slightly doing season one energy, to not have, you know, twists and all of that. But you could have just, you know, 5 minutes brainstorming if they'd wanted to, which I guess they didn't. But if they wanted to, you could have just said, you know, this is a special shield. If you get this shield, you can take a shield, but it means you have to take it from someone else. And they won't know, you know, like something like that. There could just be a couple of little things in there because they got, because it looked good, the urns, all of that. It was good, but there was just no jeopardy, really.
Yeah, I like that idea of stealing it off somebody. In the end, it is Maruya and Aroha who win the shields, although Madeline doesn't tell everybody who. She just, they can see that they all come back in, they see that two shield urns are broken, and they've only added $1,500. I'm saying only, if anyone wants to send me $1,500, go ahead. And just as they're leaving, they're all walking out together. Various players are saying, "Oh, I hit this. Oh, I got this." And Keanu says, "I got a good night's sleep." Obviously, trying to imply he got a shield without being explicit. And so some people are like, "Oh, yay." They think, "Oh, they've been tricked. They think he's got a shield." And then we're in the car and Keanu is with Maruya in the front and Hannah's sitting in the back. And Maruya reveals, well, she got a shield. And I thought, oh, this could be really bad. Imagine Hannah had been the other person in the back and went, oh, me too. And then Keanu was like, oh, one of us is lying. Like, this could have been so awkward. So I think it was very risky of Keanu to do this. I know he didn't say he had one, he just implied it. But I think the others, they bought it. They just took him at face value. So
True, although of course he could have, which he probably thought of because he seems like a very smart guy, he totally could have said, he was like, okay, you got me. I didn't get a shield. I just feel like I might be murdered. So, you know,
right.
I tried my best. Well done, ladies, you know,
That's true.
could have
Yeah,
pulled it
just
off.
say, oh, I just didn't want to be murdered, so I just was saying that so that I could fake protect myself. Yeah, you could have absolutely gotten away with it with that. Meanwhile, in another car, Maria asks if anyone, she's with Chloe, Aroha, and Violette, if anyone suspects any of the guys. They haven't talked about them much. So I think Violette even makes a joke like, who even are the guys left or something? And they seem a little bit dismissive of this conversation. Chloe gets quite defensive of Keanu and she's like, there's no way he's a traitor, I just can't see it. And that makes Maria a little suspicious of Chloe because she really does suspect Keanu. So it's an interesting moment there. And also maybe further proves that Violet is so set on who she thinks is a traitor, which right now is Arawat and Chloe, that she's really not willing to look beyond that. To even make the joke and say, what guys? Don't even know what guys are left. So that is probably a bit of a flaw in her game to just be too laser focused on who she thinks the traitor is and not even question beyond that. Back at the manor, slash castle, slash house, slash B&B, Violette is going really hard for Chloe and Hannah's pressing her, like, well, explain why do you think it's Chloe, I'm not convinced. Violet's reasons are A, well, Harrison suspected her before he was banished. And I talk about this a lot. I sort of think, and like, why does that mean she's a traitor? Because Harrison thought so, big deal. And B, she was in the death match. Violet has convinced herself a traitor must have put themselves in there. You talked about this earlier, I know, and you're probably going to talk about it again at the round table. She's so confident. She says 100% a traitor would have put themselves in there. And I really struggle when players in all seasons say things like this. They say, I'm like, I'm so sure. I don't mean the 100% faithful thing that we laugh at, but when they're like, he's a traitor, I know it 100%. I think it's okay to admit you're not 100% sure. It's okay to say, like, they're at the top of my list, and I know I could be wrong. But to just so blindly be like, 100%, I know it, I've got it, I'm convinced, you can't convince me otherwise. I don't know how other players, like, how do you interact with that?
Yes, there's a few things here, but the first thing that comes up is I found it, I do find it annoying. I find it annoying to watch because it's like, you know, as we see with Violet, like it's not, it actually doesn't help, like to be that convinced and, you know, you're speaking with passion. But what I'm thinking now is that actually that makes you look super faithful if you think
I
about
guess,
it. Because a traitor would never say, again, referencing the comeback with Lisa Kudrow, where, you know, she's just a tiny clip of her on the traitors and she's like, well, I know he's a faithful. Well, how do you know? I mean, I just feel, oh, it's so stressful, you know. That's the thing, is a traitor. It's an interesting bit of factoid, listeners, if you can come out, see if you can find some, do some research for us. Has a traitor ever said, I know 100% they're a traitor? Like, you know, if you're going traitor on traitor, or 100% they're faithful, I know it, no, it's 100%. That might be something that a traitor would almost never say.
I can think of one example of a traitor who did that really well. So this is a slight spoiler. Skip a l I'm going to talk about a UK series. If you don't want to know, skip ahead. I think Rachel in series 4 was really good at this, at faking being a faithful and being so convinced about like Ross was one of the players. She was gunning for him, like for several round tails, and then he was managed and he was a faithful, and she just got to totally fake like, I'm so sorry, I was so sure, guys. So I think Rachel was very good at that. I think she did it with a couple of people, just, and she would try and catch Ross out. Like, I'm sure she turned to him at round table and was like, so what did you talk about? Or she said like, oh, wait, are you always like this at the conclave at the turret? And he was like, what? And she was just sort of like, caught him out, guys. Like, so she was great at
True.
acting like this confident faithful. So, but yes, it's very rare. I think you're right. And maybe Violette, I don't know. Maybe that's her plan. Maybe her plan is I'm going to act so confident and cocky that actually I'll look like a faithful. I don't think it is, but maybe it'll work.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because you would say it's again, it's this reverse psychology. It's like the opposite to the thing, saying the only ones who know 100% are the traitors. But if you're saying 100%, it almost certainly means you're faithful. You know, it's like, wow, okay, this is why this game is so fascinating, because you end up in these layers. But I let's see what happens with Violette. But if I were a traitor, I would want her gone. I just would.
That's my sort of immediate reaction, is that she's putting herself in danger of being murdered. Keanu and James do have a little moment alone together. James tells Keanu he wants to go all the way to the end with him. He can really see them making it. But they don't seem to get along together. Violette joins in. She wants to talk about Aroha and going for her tonight. Maria joins as well. And is a bit sort of flustered by Violette's confidence. She does suspect Aroha too, but she's torn. She's like, on one hand, you're telling me to go for Aroha and you seem so confident about it, but I also suspect Keanu, but I know probably other people aren't going to go for him. So she's got this dilemma. And with that, we move into a round table. Coming in, James is telling us in Miv that he's really confident. At this point, the faithful are doing all the work for them. The end is in sight. And Madeline then greets them all, tells them that the prize fund is $49,200. I want to make a little note here. I always mention this. It's just sort of a habit of me on the podcast. When we get to the round table, update myself and listeners on what's the prize fund at this point. And it's just a sort of habitual thing that I make a little note of. But for some reason, at this point in the episode, I thought I should think about that a little more. I'm trying to put myself in these players' positions and think about the intensity of this whole situation. Then gearing yourself up for the round table, you're told to come in silence and do your walk to the room and sit down and not speak. And you know that this big discussion's coming up, and then you're going to have to vote someone out. To then have the host there and remind you that 50 grand is up for grabs. Like, it is important. It is a lot of money. And so, it just seems sometimes I think, don't even need to bother writing down how much the prize fund is. But no, for the players, it must be like a constant reminder, oh my God, this isn't just a game, actually. I mean, it is a game, but it's a really high stakes game. There are genuine, possible, positive real life consequences if I can win this whole thing. So, Just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, it's true. We do sometimes forget because, I mean, that's almost like the figure is just a figure. But if you actually stop and think about it, it's like on Drag Race, they win like $200,000. And I know that, half of that goes to tax almost. But even still, it's like it's an awful lot of money. It's just, yeah. I don't know. I think you're right. It just becomes a bit of a ritual. They just end up saying this number, and you're like, oh, okay. I mean, I've just looked it up. It is still a lot of money, but in pounds, 21, 22,000 pounds, because it's almost half.
Okay. I mean, even if I was playing a game of the traitors and there was £20,000 up for grabs, I would agonize over every decision. I would be constantly thinking, oh my, I don't want to do the wrong thing here and eliminate myself when I could get to the end and win like a shit ton of money. So the discussion begins. Hannah starts us off. She's talking about the death match. She doesn't believe a traitor was in that mix at all. She can't see it that way. And she takes this strange swerve. I was quite surprised this made the edit because I don't know what it's going to come to. She turns to Aaron. We've not seen a lot of Aaron in this episode. I would argue we've not seen a lot of Aaron throughout the season. And she talks about him being super fit, and he's a like a triathlete. And she's wondering if he could be a traitor because she's thinking back to Janiyah, who was murdered off. I think maybe he was the first murder. And Janiyah was really, he's like this big buff fit guy. And she's thinking, why would anyone have got rid of someone really fit who could have helped us in the missions? Might it have been someone else who's really fit? I like I said, I really like Hannah. I think she's very clever. This is quite a strange line of questioning. I was confused by this. And Aaron just
Was
yeah,
she
on
not
you go.
just flirting? Aaron, you're just really fit. I mean, you're just really fit. You really work out. Like you just got really, you're like really muscly and like really fit, and therefore you're a traitor or faithful or something. But I just want to focus on the fact that you're really fit. It's like a very strange way, a very strange place to flirt.
Well, if that's what's going on, good on her. He just calmly affirms he's a faithful, and he's very, very measured, Aaron. And it seems to work. Like he doesn't seem to ever get angry or upset. He's quite placid, which I think makes him look like just quite reasonable and like a good faithful. He says he is a faithful, and he tries to remind her of some things that he's done in the game that he thinks prove that. He helped to get Brad out. Brad's a traitor. He found the stamp in the mission that prevented a murder from happening. Surely a traitor wouldn't have done that. And everyone seems appeased by that, and they move on. Sam encourages Maria to speak up because Maria is often quite quiet at round table. And Maria says, well, I suppose I've always had suspicions of Aroha because I think she says, you just never talk strategy with me. And I think Aroha's response is like, well, because you're so quiet at round table, I never thought that I didn't know if I could approach you and talk about strategy. I just didn't feel that connection between us. Violette then speaks up. Of course, she's going to target Aroha. But to help bolster her arguments, reveals something. She says she wants to share something about her profile as a player. And everyone goes, oh, what? And I thought, is she what? Has she got some sort of secret connection here? Like, what's about to happen? It's not quite as dramatic as that. She tells them that she has just spent 4 years at Yale in the States and has worked in geopolitical intelligence. And her job has involved building reports on high-profile suspicious individuals. So the others are all blown away by this. And I think Maruia even makes a little joke like, why haven't you used your skills to help us or something? And so they're all very impressed. Violet says, look, I've not told you because I know that sometimes in this show people are targeted for having jobs like this, but I'm on the warpath. I'm positive Ara has a traitor. Tonight's the night for me to mention this. She does give one good reason to justify her suspicions. She says, well, now we know that Dave was a faithful, and Aroha, you had been really coming for Dave and you were obsessed over Stampgate. So now that we know the truth about Dave, that makes me suspicious that you're a traitor and you were trying to throw him under the bus. Magicka, any further thoughts on Violette here?
I could be really mean and say, how much did you pay to attend Yale? And did they have a refund policy at all? I'm
Oh,
joking. I
Magicka.
am, of course, joking because, as we know, this game is really, really hard. And I'm super enjoying Violette as a player. As I say, it's very frustrating to see someone not only get it so wrong, but be 100%, 100%. Let's not even debate it. It's so and so. It's definitely a trade, 100%. It is a little bit frustrating, but it's making for good TV. What she is incredibly, charismatic, articulate, and she's got theories and she's backing them up. So she's a great, interesting player, but she's totally wrong. I mean, totally wrong.
Yes, she is, and we know that, and Aroha knows that. At this point, I thought Aroha was taking it pretty well. Last time at the round table, when she got some votes and her name came up, she was really surprised by it and quite upset. At this point, she's sort of able to smile about it and just nod along, and she even drops a little bit of shade to Violette and says, "Well, I hope this doesn't ruin your career." And Hannah steps in to defend Aroha and make an important point. She's saying to Violette, "Well, your career is all well and good and very impressive. Doesn't make you any better at this game. Doesn't make you able to tell when someone is lying straight to your face," which I agree with. Amen, Hannah. And then here we go. It's the moment we. This is the moment. This is the moment we have been alluding to since early in the podcast episode. It's Debbie versus James. Debbie brings up this point that she mentioned earlier today, that she was in the cars. She mentioned something about the traitors getting really comfortable. There was silence. No one responded. And the others are listening. Maria even says, "Sorry, can you repeat that, Debbie? Like, what? I don't get what your point is." But James interrupts, and it's just very uncomfortable. He's like, "Yes, Debbie, I remember you said this." But he's saying, "Debbie, this isn't the only time you have brought up something that's been met with total silence." And he gives this big speech about, "Debbie, look, you're great. I respect you. You're nice. But that deserving to be in the game and deserving to get to the end of the game are not the same thing." Whoa, James.
Can we? You haven't got the shade sound effect here. Rattlesnake of shade.
Yes, like holy moly. And Debbie sort of is taken aback and says, "Well, even if you think that, that doesn't make me a traitor." And James keeps going and he says, "Well, I'm not saying that. I don't think you're capable of being a traitor." James, it's so awkward.
Hit the shade button once again. That shade button is going to run out of batteries.
I then think that at some point during this, James does realise, "I've said too much, I shouldn't have said this." Just keeps digging, can't get himself out of it, keeps going, and says, "Debbie clearly just doesn't understand how this game works." It's so weird. I think James did get a bit rattled by what Debbie said, tried to, I don't know what to say. I think he started and then just couldn't stop, and then realised halfway through, "Oh God, what am I doing?" And eventually Hannah comes to the rescue and is like, "I think I'll take over." James is like, "Yes, please, someone take over. Stop me before I stop myself." Hannah doesn't get to say much though, because Madeline soon returns and ends the discussion.
Doesn't that happen? We're still going, oh God, she's back. Oh no, Madeline's back. I'm sure someone lets out a little exclamation of like, oh no, here she is.
Yeah,
I told you it's
it
the
does.
Madeline sweep. She's like cornered the market in the sweep. She sweeps in. I was like, oh God, here she is.
She's back. She's appeared like a ghoul from the shadows. And it's time to vote. Aaron is the one to begin tonight. He votes for Aroha. Aroha's next and votes for Debbie, which I was a little bit surprised at. I wonder. I don't know why. I don't know if Aroha just thought Debbie's probably the only person that's maybe going to get votes tonight and I have to save myself.
I didn't
Debbie's.
understand these Debbie votes at all. I don't know where they came from. I know there was the weird moment, but that had nothing to do with thinking that she was a traitor.
Yeah,
I was
I
so
wondered
confused.
if there was more that we just
Yeah.
didn't see, that
Must have been. I
maybe.
feel like there must have been.
Yeah, maybe another player had said, "Yeah, Debbie, that's not helping, or that was weird, or I think you're doing this to throw us all off, or something." I don't know. Debbie then votes for Hannah because that's who she thinks it is, based on the car and based on the Jill Harrison thing. Sam is next and votes for Aroha, which is not a surprise. And while these votes even are coming in at this point, Aroha is sort of smiling. She seems okay with it. She knew this was going to happen from some of these players. Hannah's next and votes for Debbie. Maruya votes for Debbie. Oh yeah, I thought, oh, Debbie has three votes. I did not expect this. Next couple of votes are for Aroha. It's Violet and Chloe. They're part of the yeah. That's not much of a surprise. So it's quite even at this point. Aroha has four. Debbie has three. Hannah has a random one. And Keanu's next, and it's at this point that Aroha just can't hold it back, and she does start crying. I think she gets on well with Keanu, and I think she knows what he's about to do, and he votes for her, and it is so tough. I can't. It really is so difficult. It's so emotional watching these because they seem like such a nice group of people, and they genuinely get on with one another, apart from James and Debbie, and they're having to play the game and vote one another out, and they can't help but take it personally. I get it. So Debbie would, at this point, there are only two votes left. Debbie would need to get the next two votes to make it a tie. It's very unlikely. Maria's next, votes for Aroha, feels awful about it. She says, "Aroha by name, Aroha by nature," which, because someone pointed this out to me online, Aroha means love. Isn't that nice? And
Yeah, I just looked it up. I've got it here. It's a Maori word that means love, compassion, empathy, and affection. And it's similar to the Hawaiian concept of aloha, like deep emotional
Aroha,
connection.
aloha. There we
Yeah.
go. And she's got it on her t-shirt today. So for it's not, I don't think it's a custom-made t-shirt. It's just because it's a word that people use in
Yeah.
different contexts. So it's a lovely name. And we know that means that she's toast. James votes next, also votes for Aroha, which is a bit of a surprise to some of the other players, but we'll come back to that. So Aroha's banished, gives her goodbye speech, and says, "To be honest, where it fell down for me was that I forgot to not be myself." She's like, "I was just me, and maybe I shouldn't have just been me. Maybe I should have been putting on some sort of act." And says, "You can be cool and funny and hot and smart, and not a traitor. I won a shield today." Very important that she revealed that. "I was really looking forward to tomorrow, because I'm a faithful." And she leaves. It's tough. Hannah is upset and so annoyed at everyone. They've just voted off her friend, and she knew they were wrong. They all look gutted. Violet looks particularly pissed off that she's gotten it wrong, but it's probably not going to change that much as she moves forward. And Debbie is also just sort of like so fed up, and she says, "Try to just kill me tonight." She says that was horrible and not deserved. Poor Debbie. I felt really bad for Debbie. She just gets up and leaves. Keanu follows behind. Hannah's crying. They're all leaving. Hannah's really mad at Maria. She said, "You just followed. You just fell for it. You drank the Kool-Aid." It's a really tense one. It's really uncomfortable, actually. And so they have a little bit of time to gather and share their thoughts outside the round table. Before I talk about what ends up happening here, I'll just focus on Aroha telling them she had the shield. I think that was the first time she'd revealed it, unless she had secretly told one or two people. I don't know. Again, I wondered if that might cause a problem for Keanu, because now we, unless Aroha was lying, and I don't know why she would have the motivation to lie on her way out. They pretty much know now who's got the two shields. So is anyone going, "Hey, this doesn't make sense. Three people are claiming they've got a shield.
So
Something's
take me through it. Was it Maruya?
So she told some people in the car that she specifically told them, "I got a shield." I don't know if she told
Yeah.
everyone, but she told two people. Doesn't seem to be hiding it. Now they know that Aroha had one. Keanu's implied he had one, but they know from the mission only two people had them. So I thought this was gonna create some conversation. Maybe it will next time. We'll see. And so James is here feeling really terrible about what's just happened, and he's talking to Keanu about it, and Keanu's sort of like, on one hand trying to comfort him, on the other hand a bit like, why the hell did you do that? He even says in his mouth, why could I not have a good team? He's like, how do I keep ending up with these people who keep saying these mad things and doing terrible things? Debbie comes out, she hugs Keanu, they obviously get on really well. It's just this bizarre atmosphere of James sitting down, other players standing around, Keanu and Debbie hugging, and Keanu says to Debbie, I love this. He's like, remember what I told you, you're a boss bitch. I just love the idea of lovely, lovely Debbie being told you're a boss bitch. Now, I was going to save this to the end, but I'm going to do a little spoiler here. Debbie is going to be joining me on the podcast for an interview. Is it appropriate if I say, Debbie, boss bitch, welcome to the podcast? Should we take that well? Would she?
Well, I mean, considering that she is 2 years younger than Madonna, and Madonna is very much, I think, owns the whole boss bitch thing. I
Yes.
think, the youngsters compared to the older generation like Madonna, Debbie is sprightly and youthful, so I think
Yeah.
she would probably take the boss bitch and own it.
Okay, that's fine. I'll do it. And if she has a problem with it, I'll say, Magic Girl told me to. So James tries to talk to Debbie. She's not having it. She's not in the mood. Everyone just awkwardly leaves James on his own. Outside, Maria is, she's so mad at what just happened. She's mad with herself, but she's mad with Sam and Vila and Aaron. She's like, you convinced me I should vote for Arawa and I shouldn't have. Why did I listen? And she tells them, I think it's Keanu. I've suspected him from day one. She compares him to a pastor at church during roundtable. And she says this interesting thing. She says, everyone listens when he speaks, but he's not actually saying anything. And I think I know what she means. Quite often at the roundtable, Keanu will speak up, but will really hedge his bets and be like, oh, I can see why everyone's going to vote for you. I don't know what to do. Maybe I should. So he doesn't really ever commit himself to what he's about to do. Violet, of course, is just like, nah, not Keanu. And she's like, well, remember how much he cried at Harrison's banishment? No way. He's a faithful. But Maria says, well, he could still be a traitor. Maybe that's why he was crying so much, because he was a traitor and he had to send him home.
This is where, if there were screenings, because there was a World Cup match last night with England, if there were screenings of Traitors New Zealand in the same way that there are of the England football, at that point the crowd would have gone wild. Hey, Maria, yeah! They would have been chucking their beer all over the place, because I was not chucking beer, you understand, but I was going, wow. Wow, this is like a hat trick. Like she is like slammed, to mix my sports, slam dunking the ball into the net. I don't know, to the pocket. I don't know if she's putting a ball somewhere. Anyway, and she's amazing. She's because she's just absolutely nailed it in spite of other people saying, nah, definitely not that. Because she's
Yeah.
right. She's just right. And it's so
Yeah.
hard to be right in this game. Amazing.
I know, it really makes me root for Maria. I really want her to make it and, make it all work for her and get to the bottom of it and get the traitors. So often it doesn't, and she might end up murdered, but it would be great at justice to. And usually in this show, I generally tend to root for the traitors, but actually this time I think I want, and I like Keanu, I think he's doing a great job. I kind of want the I would love Maria to get to the end and feel vindicated. Next, Maruya has a little chat. By the way, I should stage a screening for the final of Traitors New Zealand somewhere in London, and give everyone drinks to just throw at a screen or
Can we do it at like
something.
4 o'clock in the morning so that it's like authentic to the time
Yes, of
zone?
course.
Yeah,
Yes,
great.
I'll rent out a venue at like 4 a.m. Welcome, everybody. I'll see you there. Maruya has a little chat with Debbie. She's trying to comfort her. And Debbie's telling us this has actually strengthened her resolve. This has made her even more, given her a bit more fight in the game. And inside, Sam, there's this weird moment. I don't know if you interpreted this the way that I did. There's a really strange thing that I think happens here. Sam is sitting beside James on the couch. James is feeling awful about what just happened. And Sam says to him, "My brain won't let me look at you." And I thought she was being really shady and saying, "I can't even look at you right now. I'm so horrified." What she actually meant was almost the opposite. Like, you're so nice, I just can't look at you as a traitor. I can't suspect you. But I watched the episode of Cut twice, and both times I thought first out she meant I can't even look at you because of what you've just done. And I have a feeling that James may also have thought she meant that because he starts crying when she says it. Unless he's crying because he's like, "Oh, that's so nice of you to be nice to me, even though I just made an idiot of myself." So he's crying, and Sam and Chloe comes over, and they're trying to comfort him, and it'd be really nice to him. And oh, it's just this is awful to watch. And James, in his interview, says it all just came out the wrong way. I was trying to have this image as a nice, sensitive guy, and I think I ruined it. I'm putting a pin in that. I'm going to come back to it. I felt really bad for James here. Didn't feel quite so bad for him a little later in the episode. Back outside, Debbie is reiterating that actually, this has made her think James is a traitor even more. She thinks he was retaliating because he'd been sussed a little because of what she said. So Detective Debbie, as I now shall call her, is starting to actually be on the right track. And it's bedtime shortly after this. We head off, we're at the turret. James now suddenly seems totally fine. In fact, not only does he seem fine, he tells Keanu, "Oh, I was just pretending to feel bad about that." He's like, "I just wanted to remind everyone that I really am quite sensitive, but haha, I don't care." And Keanu's like, "Oh my God, James, I also like was I was gagged and gooped." I was like, "James, I've got..." And I don't know if James is just it's just a bit of ego in the turret, and I don't know what to believe. I'm like, maybe he is a bit upset about what he's done, but he doesn't want to show that here in front of Keanu. He's trying to act a bit, or what?
I felt that he was hamming it up, and but very well. Like I thought he was acting, but acting really well. I don't think he would have been quite. I mean, I don't know because I don't know the guy, but I don't think he would have been that devastated. And I do think because we've seen that in the past when he's kind of gone over to Keanu and like whispered something in his ear, and you're like, oh, you are playing this really quite well, actually. I think we weren't prepared that James was going to be such a good actor, and when that happened, I think it was acting. I think he was had a little bit of upset, like actors do. You have a little bit, and you eke it out, and you go a bit deeper, and you try and pull out the emotion, to Stanislavski and all of that, trying to actually feel method acting, trying to feel the thing that you're meant to be evoking. I think it was acting, yeah. But based on a little bit, he was clearly. It's not nice to be spoke. It's not nice to have said such nasty things to someone and then feel guilty, but he was definitely pulling on that thread to get the most emotion out of it. I think he, I don't know, I think he's it's a fascinating turret, those two, but they've almost gone in opposite directions, haven't they? Because Keanu was all like bravado and like, yeah, here we go, and he's like, oh, what's going on now? And James kind of started a little bit sheepish, and now he's kind of exploding. Like, it's very interesting dynamics.
And I think James is, I know he does captions, subtitles for TV. That's his main job. But I think he is also like a gamer. I think he's really into the traitors and this sort of thing. So and he really, really wanted to be a traitor. He told us it was his fantasy. So yeah, it makes sense. He's got it sussed. Like he knows what how to he knows what act he wants to put on to do well in the game. They do acknowledge James has kind of messed up. They're going to have to work hard tomorrow to redress it. They quickly dismiss the opportunity to recruit. In fact, Madeline doesn't even bother coming in to offer it to them. They've just got the two sheets of paper. They're like, "Nah, no recruitment, let's just murder." Here are their options. Sam. And Keanu now tells James for the first time that he knows Sam outside of the game. I don't know why Keanu chose this moment to tell James that. I don't know if he should have just kept it to himself. But
Unless he's basically, not going to negotiate on the fact that she's got to go. So he's just kind of like, yeah, trust me, I know her, she's got to go.
Yeah, he's saying that he knows that she's very smart, very observant, and therefore dangerous. They mention Hannah, similarly, very clever, very good at the game. And James says this. Let's use a misheard sentence, sort of misheard. He says, "Do you feel the gaze when she looks at you?" And I was like, "That what did you call me? Do you feel the gaze? Oh, Gaze, not Gays. Do you feel the gaze?" I was like, "James." And then I understood. They talk about Violette, same reason, very smart, could be quite intimidating if she turns her eyes to them at round table. They don't want to face that. They make their decision, they shake on it, sign the death warrant. It's the end of the episode. Now, before we get to my big news that I am building up, and a couple of listener voice notes to talk about, and maybe even our predictions of what is going to happen in episode 8, Magicka, because you have been so fascinating and insightful and wise and intelligent and impressive and talented, how can people experience
Bit
more
more.
and handsome and
Okay.
charismatic?
Yeah.
How can people experience even more of that? Where can we absorb more of Magicka online?
I mean, you go to absorbmoreofmagicka.com. That's the, I'm gonna just trademark that right now. No, come and give me a follow on Substack. That's the place. As you know, Matthew, I'm writing some chapters at the moment of what could potentially be a book in the future, but it's about music and about how music can teach us to listen to each other better. So, like, it's listening lessons from music. And I'm preparing a few. I haven't posted yet, but will do soon. So, come and give me a follow on Substack. It's totally free. Links in the show notes, and it's magicka.substack.com.
And I've had a little preview, so it will be absolutely worth it. And Magicka is obviously very genuinely knowledgeable about music and listening, and it's what I heard from you was really insightful and provocative, and I can't wait to read more. So I'm really
Oh,
excited
thank
about
you.
that. For the podcast, we're all over social media, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, at the Trade Hour Podcast. And if you are wondering why on earth would I follow you in social media, I listen to the podcast, that's enough. It's because in social media, I can give you even more very quick updates on what's happening in the world of the traitors. Are there events going on? Are there new seasons coming out? Is there a way that you can go and see, like, there's a. Some of the UK players are doing an event in Sheffield. It's got free tickets. So I just sort of share things like that that you might want to get involved in. And you can, of course, send me messages on those platforms, particularly on YouTube. People often leave comments beneath the videos and talk to one another about their theories. You can also send me an email at thetradearpodcast@gmail.com. You could also leave a voice note at memo.fm/thetradearpodcast. We have a couple of voice notes coming up, so you could again ask us questions, tell us what you want us to think about and discuss on the podcast. I have another podcast that has just launched, so when you listen to this, the first episode will be out there. It's called A Word After School. It's on YouTube at A Word After School, or on Instagram at A Word After School Podcast. It should be on most of the usual audio platforms too. It's all about my past career as a teacher. I was an English teacher for many, many years, and left that career a few years ago, but have now reconnected with some of the pupils I taught who are now approaching 30, and I want to know what they really thought about school now that they look back and they can say what maybe they couldn't have said when they were a teenager and honestly reflect and tell some very funny stories along the way. So, first episode's out now. It would be great if you took a listen. You can support the podcast in a couple of ways. You could visit thetradar.redbubble.com, where there is all sorts of wonderful merchandise that's got the Trade Hour all over it, and you can show people how much you love the show and love the podcast. Or if you wanted to support in a slightly smaller way, but no less valuable to me, you could visit ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com/Matthew Keeley. You can put in a donation of your amount without subscribing to anything. You can subscribe if you want, you don't have to do that. And I have to say thank you to Debbie. Debbie sent in a donation on ko-fi.com. I think Debbie also bought something on Redbubble, which was very, very kind. And Debbie has sent in a voice note, so I'm going to play that right now.
Hi, Matthew. This is Debbie K from Texas. Just wanted to give you kudos for everything you do. I discovered the traders by accident a few years ago. I managed to get a couple of them, or a few actually, of my friends to watch a couple seasons, but they're just not into, watching the episode and talking about it like I am. So I really was very excited when I found your podcast somehow, and really appreciate listening to you and all your guests analyze and discuss each episode. So just wanted to say thanks. Keep up the good work. I may send you in a written comment with my other thoughts, but very, very much appreciate you and your podcast. Wanted you to know that.
Thanks so much, Debbie. That was really, really kind of you. Thank you for the donation that you sent in too. And Debbie, send me your thoughts. Send me an email and we'll talk about whatever you are thinking of the episodes right now. Thank you. Magikar, I don't know if you have watched episode 8 yet. Do you know what is going to happen? Okay.
I haven't.
I do know a few things. I will not spoil anything, of course. Do you have either any predictions or any thoughts about what you would do if you were in the traitor's position right now? Are there any of those three players on the shortlist that you think would be the best option to murder?
I'm very bad at predictions. I just always think like I'm not in the game, so it's really hard. And even when I was a traitor playing your online game, I found it very difficult, and I let my fellow amazing traitor make a lot of the assessments. Because I see things kind of more generally, so it's very difficult to go into specifics. And actually, those three players, those three ladies, anyone, like all of them need to go. Can we have a triple murder, please? They need to go. They are faithful, they are on it, they are smart, articulate, like totally committed to their theories. I'm just going to go with Violette because she's the most forceful, and I would not want her on my case. She keeps getting it wrong, but we see these players are very dangerous because then when they get it right, if I just wouldn't want her going after me, particularly with what she's shared about, being Yale trained. She's dangerous. She's super dangerous. You got to get rid of her sooner or later. I don't think she's going to get herself banished. She's got to go.
Okay. I made a prediction immediately after watching this episode. So this was my, and I won't confirm whether or not this proves true. This was my prediction when I watched the episode. I predicted Hannah would be the one murdered. I thought that no way would Keanu get rid of Sam. I reckoned he wants to keep that ally in the game. So I didn't think he would get rid of her. And I thought it would be wise to keep the Yeas alive, keep that group. So that includes Violette. I actually thought keep Violette, keep Sam, and Hannah is maybe the one to get rid of. She's a sort of a free thinker. She was in the car when Keanu, well, he'd already done it before this, when Maruya revealed she had a shield. So Hannah knows that Keanu's also implied he had a shield, and she knows that Arrow had one, so she might suss that something's not quite right here. Maybe he won't. I thought he wouldn't want her to remind anyone of that. So Hannah is my prediction. I've got another voice note from one of our listeners. This is Alan. Alan has sent us a voice note before. Alan is a familiar voice in a way because Alan is from Scotland. Here we go.
Hi guys, Alan from Not So Sunny Scotland here again. This season of The Traitors, I thought it was pretty decent until episode 5 and 6, where I think it's really ramped up. Drama's really good, the emotions are high, really gripping stuff. I thought that was a really good couple of episodes. First thing, the phone mission in episode 5. I agree, this is a really good implementation of the mission that we saw in Traitors India, which I think we all agreed was not a very good version of that mission. And just like Mark said, I think a bit more time would have been nice. If they do this mission again, they should give them a bit more time to communicate with each other, the teams, and that would just add a little bit extra to it. But yeah, good mission that one. Next thing, Keanu and James. This is a duo that I don't think any of us suspected or knew that we needed, but what a duo this is. This is so good. James is a very interesting character. He seems to have this like dark, ruthless side to him, which we saw come out. And at the same time, he's very sympathetic and warm to Keanu. He seems like he might be a good team player, but I just wonder, is that ruthless side of James going to come out again later in the season? Can he and Keanu stick it to the end? This is going to be very interesting to watch how that relationship develops. And last thing, I think the way that they had to do the words in the sentences to knock off the victims in the last episode. Normally, I'm not a big fan of that kind of traitor's mission, but this one was really fun, and the way that they used the words was so clever. Oh, that was a really good one. So maybe they've changed my mind on that one a bit. Anyway, love the pod as ever. Good to hear some of the season two guests come on as well. Hello to you guys. And as always, enjoy the pod. Take it easy. Cheers.
Thanks for that, Alan. Alan is, I guess, echoing what we've been saying. We're really, really enjoying the season. And Alan is particularly enjoying some of the missions there. There's something I will pick up on for us to talk about. Alan talked about this duo, James and Keanu, thinks that they make a really interesting traitor pair. I'm kind of asking you for a prediction in a way here, Magicka. What do you foresee for these two? Do you think they could make it all the way to the end together?
Oh, it's so hard to know, isn't it? Because normally when they're doing well, it means they don't do well. Do you know what I mean? Normally when traitors are doing well at this point, you think, yeah, but there just comes a point where if they keep banishing faithful, I know they got a couple of traitors, but then if they keep banishing faithful, then they go, what are we doing wrong? We need to start looking at the people we're not looking at. And that's already starting to happen, I think, with both of them. I would be surprised if both of them make it through. And just something in my bones is saying that, yeah, these two are not going to be at the end. I don't know. I don't know. Let's see. I haven't done the maths of how many episodes we've got left, how many, game moves there can be in terms of recruitments or whatever. So I don't know. I mean, if you had to say one of these is going to go through it, I would say Keanu, because I just think people like him so much. I think there might be a thing of, well, give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. And it's funny that Alan mentioned James's ruthless sides, because Alan sent this before he'd seen episode 7. And we've just talked about James and how he was with Debbie at the round table and how that's played out. So, Alan, your question's kind of been answered by this episode. Yes, we have seen a bit more of that ruthlessness from James. Where will it take him? I wonder. I've been mentioning some news for the podcast. I'm go into detail now. I've sort of spilled the beans a little bit. I said that Debbie was going to come on the pod. I'm going to be interviewing her. Actually, I'm going to be interviewing several of the players from this season. So a little later today, as we are recording this, I'm going to be speaking to Aaron, Debbie, Brad, Maria, and Michael, all about their time individually, not all together, about their time on the show. And then I will put out those interviews over the next few days. So you'll get to hear from them. Now, of course, at this point, by the time you hear this, I will have already interviewed them. But if you've got any questions for some of the other players, I may be speaking to others from the season over the next couple of weeks. So if you've got some pressing questions, something that you want me to put to them on the podcast, send me your thoughts. What would you like me to ask any of the other remaining players, players who've survived past episode 6? And I may well be speaking to them, and I can give them your questions and we'll have a chat about them. So very much looking forward to that. Very exciting. Magicka, thank you so much for joining me again. You may not be back on the pod for this season, but you, I'm sure, I hope, will be back for whatever is next. Traitors Ireland, India, Celebrity UK, all of the seasons that we have coming for the rest of this year. I hope you will be back.
Thank you so much for having me. Enjoy the rest of the season, everybody. This is a really good one. And look, all is right with the world. Traitors NZ is back on our screens. What more could we wish for?
Exactly. I'll be back to cover episode 8 very, very soon. Until then, laters, traitors.
And dig them potatoes.